Shumei, I'm not sure if Hannah has explained what's going on to
I,
you.
yeah, I think so. And let's
So
see.
we wait for a little bit. Do we wait, Hannah, or shall we just start?
I think we can start because it's time, right?
Okay,
So we are already
I
5 minutes
think,
late.
let me just check. Yeah, okay. So I think we have a good audience. Okay, so then let's start. It's a great pleasure to introduce Professor Xumei Li, who's going to give the talk today. And I would like to say a few things about Xumei. I've known Xumei for a long, long, long time, more than I
Ooh.
No, not that long. Yeah, so I've known her from the time when we were taking part in the in conferences that were called the Future of Stochastic Analysis. Do you remember, Shumei, those times?
I do. The future now is the
So we are
his
now in
the
the
past.
future, in the future of stochastic analysis. Anyway, Shumei is my colleague here at Imperial College London, and also she is a professor at EPFL. She got her PhD from the University of Warwick, and where she studied evolution of stochastic differential equations and connections with geometric stochastic analysis. And he had some postdoctoral. She had some postdoctoral work, and then she moved on at the University of Connecticut, where she was tenured in 2001. And I think I got it right this time. Am I right? 2001. Yeah.
That's why they came back.
Okay. And so she has a wonderful career. She had support from many leading institutions and foundations, the NSF in the United States, the EPSRC here in the UK, and the Alexander von Humboldt Foundation in Germany. And then following that, the MSRI, and she also had here in the UK one of the few prestigious senior Royal Society level of human research fellowships. She has a wide range of interests, and she's interested in stochastic differential equations, multiscale analysis, long-range dependent noise, stochastic partial differential equations, looking at geometric stochastic analysis, investigating coarse Ricci and coarse extrinsic curvature. I don't know what that is, because this is really very far from my area of expertise. And for today, she will enlighten us as to what it means and what she has done on large scale dynamics of stochastic heat equations. Shumei.
Thank you very much. I suppose I'm moving closer to Dan, start to work on stochastic partial differential equations. I sort of choose this topic because maybe it's slightly more relevant to the group here. Talk about the grounds. I would like to do one advertisement. I just got a grant from Swiss Science Foundation and from SwissMap, so we'll be recruiting for postdocs soon. Right. So the topic today is about the stochastic heat equations. So here is the equation itself. This is a standard dt. So let's see, t is a time, x is in rd. For now, d is any dimension. And that is Laplacian. And here, this is multiplicative. noise CT here. There's a multi-collective coefficients sigma, and beta is a small constant. We're going to need it a bit later. We're going to take some initial condition. For most of the talk, is a flat initial condition one. Now, so everything going to be assumed to be very nice. Sigma going to be Lipschitz continuous. Oh, this special case, we're going to take a sigma u equal to u. So I have a linear case. We could just keep to that case. And the noise, we're going to introduce noise in a little bit. The equation itself. Suppose the noise doesn't depend on time t, then it's just a function in x. It could be random or not random. In that case, the right-hand side is a Laplacian plus beta with this function, right? If c is hold continuous, then there's a classical solution. So whether it's random or not random is not really relevant. So if it's a hold continuous, we would have an object. And this is called the real Schrödinger equation, and the Hamiltonian function is here. So people sometimes call this the Anderson model. Now we're interested in the case there is a time in this. Now the noise typically in stochastic partial differential equation when the model itself comes from mathematical physics, when thinking about the noise coming in to the time through at each time the space. The noise are independent. The typical assumption, so all the random perturbations are they're not correlated at all. Because the part of the talk is a dispute, a little, not quite a dispute, is to cover the case when this particularly independent assumptions violated. And because we have space-time decorrelation, and then the C itself is a random distribution, which means if you we could not evaluate at the time t and x, so it's not a random variable for fixed tx, but somehow we tend to just write it down as it is, even though it's not very rigorous. But rigorously speaking, we will have a test function phi. And so the C would be treated as distribution. When it's tested with a test function, we get a random variable as such. So we can have a family of random variables with respect to the parameter, which is test function. And those are Gaussian random variables for different test function. There's a correlation. So for space-time white noise, the correlation is given by this L2 norm, phi and psi. So in a way, that's where we write it down heuristically that expectation c of tx, c of sy, equal to delta of t minus x, delta x minus y. Now, the sample path of these guys belongs to in space, it loses d over 2. So this is negative hold space in x and d over 2, a little bit worse than minus d over 2. And then in t is minus a half. So is a distribution in sort of negative holder space. Now, these integrals generalize to more general function, for example, L2 functions. And then this object is called a Wiener integral with respect to that phi. So sometimes we just write it down phi d psi. So that's how we write it down sometimes. And this also generalizes to adapted L2 random variables. So we will need that concept in a bit. Now let's look at a couple of examples. The first most example is the Edward-Wilkinson model, where the noises actually take sigma to be identically one. So we have additive noise. We see this model come in later. And so the solution can be written down using mild solution format. Solution will be starting from the initial condition plus the heat kernel, convolve the Wiener integral of the heat kernel with respect to the space-time noise. Now, the solution exists in any dimension. This makes sense. In any dimension. And however, because the heat kernel improves regularity only by two, for which we pass a little bit, the one to the time, another one to space. So it only makes sense for as a real valued solution, a random field solution, it only has a random field solution in dimension one. In dimension two, it's just about to fail to have random field equation. Now, the next example is the linear stochastic heat equation, where I take a sigma u equal to u. So at any time, just thinking about this equation, the sigma u equal to u part doesn't cause a major problem as far as its Lipschitz continues. Now, for this equation, in dimension one, it's a bit like the Edward-Wilkinson equation. In dimension one, there is a random field solution. One can apply a Picard iteration, build up a solution, and keep track of all the L2 norms, you see you have a solution in dimension one. In dimension two, I think the work goes back to Bertini, Carini. The solution exists, but one had to use a renormalization procedure, means we would normalize this guy by convolve with a compact supported test function, and then rescale the test function, and so that the support getting smaller and smaller, and then the epsilon go to zero, you want the solution to converge. Well, of course, that one doesn't really converge because this is defined as Itô, and then when you take approximation, you want solution converges, you want did converge in the Stratonovich form. So, and the difference is something depends on, say, a constant C epsilon goes to infinity. When you remove that constant in the equation, the object does converge. So that's the renormalization procedure in D over 2. Now, this equation is especially interesting because through the Kohlhoff transform, its solution will be transformed into solution of the KPZ equation. The KPZ equation models the growth of random interfere in time, and you have this that's the random interfere model is associated to the linear stochastic heat equation. In addition to that, it's interesting of its own right. Another interesting to it is that there is a solution in the form of this Fermat-Cass formula, right? The solution of this linear equation is given by this variation of a constant expression, and you write down like this. And so what it means is in it's a partition function for direct polynomial meshes, so it's a particularly interesting object to study. Now, the wet noise is a scaling invariant. So if we scale it in time and in space, in this diffusive scaling, and multiply by the correct correction here, and this new object would be having the same distribution as the wet noise. Exactly like Brownian motion. For Brownian motion, you also have a scaling invariant. This is space-time scaling invariant. It comes from the correlation function. Let's look at inspired by lots of scaling invariance result for stochastic heat equations and KPC equations. We would like to look at the scaling limit, the scaling object of the solution. And we rewrite down the equation, use the original one. You see that this is the heat equation part, which is invariant with a diffusion object. And down this noise, we see epsilon minus 2. And the epsilon minus 2, if we write it down in terms of this object, which has the same distribution as the wet noise and a constant come out. So in this case, we could rewrite the equation statistically is equivalent to U epsilon to this equation. Here, say, is another wet noise. And here you have this epsilon d over 2 minus 1. Okay, so that's the equation we're going to be interested in. And the question is, what happens when t go to when epsilon go to 0 to this object? Before we work on this one, we've already seen this equation has the only meaning in d equal to 1 and d equal to 2 for the renormalization. And from our point of view, we are looking at the large time dynamics. We are not particularly interested in the seeking the solution theory. What we would do is replace wet noise by its modifier. So we modify it by convolve it with a compactly supported function. In that case, the correlation of the noise is become correlated, but it's not very correlated because the convolution is compact supported. So here's what I mean. And we take a, now I write it down using eta for the space-time wet noise. And the take a fixed t and take a convolution in space only. And that is the new noise we have interest in. Now for phi is a sort of a nice test function, smooth and everything. So now we could look at the correlation of this guy. Okay. Again, interpreted in the correct sense after integrated with respect to t. And then the correlation formally, we can write it down in this form. We have still delta t minus s because we did nothing about the time aspect, is still uncorrelated. However, this correlation going to be inherited from this convolution, right? It integrated over everything in the nearby mode because they are correlated. The correlation function in space I write it down as R. Is R, it depends on the increment between the 2 pounds, the R X minus Y. And the correlation function itself can be computed, is the integral of phi of z and phi y plus z, right? That's just E to isometry. We can compute that. And the matter, so because phi is compact supported, when 2 pounds are farther away from the support, they become uncorrelated. So it's a finite range correlation. A matter theorem states that if the correlation are compact supported, and then you run the solution in time, the correlation would disperse in the large limit. We don't see the correlation, so it's a good approximation to the uncorrelated property of the equation. Now, for a long time now, actually, since I arrived more in Imperial College, I started with my PhD student, Johann Gehenger. We started to look into large range dependence of noise. When we started this off, we were working on stochastic differential equations where you only have noise, you only have time dependence. So say it replaced the Brownian motion by a correlated noise, fractional Brownian motion. That's what we did. And then we started looking into a range of correlated objects like a Volterra process. And so this process, we realized that there's lots of things very interesting with large time correlation. First, the large time correlation being well observed in time series data in many economical, hydrodynamic, and also sort of medical data. There's many data which dictate the randomness are actually correlated in time. In finance, of course, there's also a big deal of correlation. We believe in time, of course, you have to consider this correlation. This is now quite well understood. In our case, we started to discover new interesting topic, like the law of large number theorem, where you have a typically independent, right? If you have independent random variables, and you look at the convergence of this object, if its expectation equal to zero, then we start to look at its convergence, its fluctuation from its average, so we should have a Gaussian random variable. And then looking into the time continuous analog, we have the Dunning theorem converges to a Brownian motion. And then there was also famous Kipnis-Varadan theorem. You would look at some object T over epsilon, a function of Markov process, and the function is got average to zero, and you wanted the Markov process, elliptic or Hamming spectral cap. And then with appropriately scaling this converged to say a Wiener process with effective variance. And this sort of theorem has been for a long time, and it's been very popular, it's been very much used in random environment, study of random environment. However, people has been always studying the convergence in distribution. And the time we start to look at limit theorem in the multi-scale limit theorem, we realize to use some beautiful theorem coming from Rockpath theory, And this convergence in distribution is no longer enough. And so we look at convergence in distribution of the Hodel norm. That's in dimension one. And it turns out in dimension one, if you change this theorem to convergence in Hodel norm in dimension one, you can pass this static theorem automatically to an equation. So you would have some dy dZt equal to this guy and this, z here. And then you see you pass to limit immediately. And for, of course, in higher dimensions, and we realize that we could talk about central limit theorem, function central limit theorem in rough path topology. It means we can lift one object, this object, to the rough path topology, enhance it with other processes, and so this guy had drawn the central limit theorem. So that's the first thing we did. And then with Martin, we started to looking at a multi-scale equation with slow equation driven by fraction bounding motion. And we touched also something quite interesting and unusual there. Later on, talking with Julian Zieber, he graduated also from Imperial College. He was my second graduate from here. And he has been very, very interesting. We continued our study with Johan, have some fast motion, which is fractional driven. But then take on a little bit of what we did with Martin Herrera. And then we look at sort of two things, a ergodic property of SDE driven by fraction bounding motion, which wasn't the function limit theorem aspect, is not it's a bit missing. And then we look at the slow fast. And later on, we start to look at the SPDE in this sense. Now, today is a bit different. We're going to extend the long-range dependence away from time. We're looking at the spatial correlation. And now spatial correlation is really quite a different story. Of course, we have already expected if the correlation decays very fast, it could be in a compact supported is a special case. And if it not compact support, but decays really, really fast. What we expect? Any dynamical theory we expect from the compact supported case, it should work here. And fluctuation theorem, the intuition behind it should be same as uncorrelated case. Okay, so just thinking again, the central limit theorem we know. For central limit theorem, we know it works for independent random variables, and it works for two dependent, three dependent, or finite range dependent random variables. And Rosenblatt is the first one to show if there's enough correlation, the correlation not decay enough, central limit theorem fails. Okay. And also, Dunning-Warden theorem may fail. The convergence to Brownian motion, Wiener process may fail even at the fixed time that converges to a Gaussian, but at different times there might be correlation comes in. Now, the fluctuation problem for linear SDE, which I'm going to discuss shortly, before we take this on, are all for compactly supported correlations and came from some really beautiful work. From Winterberg and Count Kosko, and I think this also early work of Dan Bo, with a few other people, Rizik, I think Dunlop, and then this Yugu and I think the paper Winterberg is with Magnan. then you go and download and the extended lot of this result. I would explain that a little bit more what the results are. And that's okay. I go to the next page. I explain a bit more. And these authors are still listed here. So what they prove the following. You take the solution of the stochastic heat equation, the linear stochastic heat equation, and it's starting from one, its average remain to be one. You look at the difference from one, okay? And test it with any test function. We want to have a law of large number. So this guy should converge to zero. Furthermore, if we scale it appropriately because it converges to zero. And then if we scale it to zero, I think it should be minus one minus d over two, I believe. It should be this guy. Then this guy actually converges to the integral of u. Tested with respect to G, the same G here. And then the weak limit U for these objects, right? For these objects. And I think that's one minus D over two. And this object actually solved the Edward-Witkin equation, the one we mentioned earlier. So it's a Laplacian plus additive white noise. And there would be a variance come in. That's the effective variance, which can be computed with this formula. Any questions? If not, I'm going to introduce my collaborators.
Shumei, can you hear me? Can you go on the previous page?
A bigger previous page,
Can you clarify what's the normalization there? Is epsilon
one minus d, one minus d over, sorry, yeah. So I will, it's epsilon one minus d over two.
Okay, so if D is one.
D is one. Ah, good point, Dan. So because we are now away from space wide time noise, you are allowed to talk about any dimension. Here I'm talking about the D greater equal to three.
Oh, okay. Okay, so this only applies if D is greater than or equal to 3, because
Yeah, and
all
that's a
right.
critical case we're working on is D equal to
Oh,
two.
yeah, okay,
These
great.
people, I think, Song, Caravana, and Zygrus, they worked on this special compact support cases. They work on the critical dimension d equal to two.
Okay, thank you, thank you.
Thank
And
you. That's
the
good.
U epsilon is both the same. It's just a typo that the epsilon is the subscript and the superscript.
Oh yeah, that would be typo,
Yes.
yeah.
Okay, thank you. Thank you.
Yeah, thank you. Okay, so this is the result we are aiming for. Now, with Martin and Luca Girola, who is currently PhD students at Imperial College, we are, of course, interested in the case R decays slowly. It's so slow that it's not integrable. That means this formula is actually doesn't make sense. So yeah, so this is the case we would be interested in when this formula becomes invalid. Okay. The just to recap, we're going to take a noise with correlation in time still wet, and the correlation in space is Rx minus Y. We're going to assume D is greater equal to 3. And just to set the record, we are not looking for the best conditions. R is smooth. So then we don't have any trouble in solution theory. However, we're going to assume a noise profile as following. The decay of a correlation is x to the minus kappa. Kappa is greater than 2, means it's not integrable, but it's smaller than d. And we also need to get a limit theorem. We're going to look at the larger scale limit, right? So at infinity, the noise need to have a shape. We need to find the shape is the following. At when epsilon go to 0, like a far away, it scales like a x to the minus kappa. And that's the two conditions we'll have. There are two results. Wien's fluctuation theory for multiplicative stochastic heat equation. So sigma would be the sigma u would be this sigma would this Lipschitz continuous. But for most of my talk, I would just pretend sigma u equal to u is linear case. So this one is in a preprint. And then we have now a result for KPZ is in the, we're writing it up for the KBC case. Now, there's a difference between stochastic heat equation and KPZ. See, for the linear SDE, if we use a logarithm transform, the Kohoff transform, log of the solution of stochastic heat equation, that solves the KPZ, right? But is only heuristically holds for d equal to 1, try to prove KPZ had a solution. This transformation had a couple of problems. One of them is what we talked before. When you transform something, we use some Stratton noise formulation, but the integral should be e to integral. There is an infinity constant need to renormalize the odd. And also log is a singular object. And so you can't just bring a result on stochastic heat equation to KPZ because obviously the things doesn't converge. Okay, but I will focus on the stochastic heat equation case. I see there is something on the chat. Is that a question? Oh, okay. Now, before maybe I start to look at the larger scale problem, let's look at a larger time question. So only take t go to infinity, we keep the x fixed. Looking at the linear case, we see initial condition 1. So we, and the solution with the initial condition 1, identically 1, would be written down as u. And we use the convolution. So utx would be the semigroup applied to 1, that's still 1. And then the semigroup, so is here is actually the kernel. I should use a small p. So it's the semigroup applied to the u, right? So it's pt minus i, it's the heat kernel. Multiply u and integrate it with respect to the space-time wet noise here. Then you see immediately the expectation is 1. The average is 1. And therefore, we are interested in the question u minus 1, what happens with this guy? And the first observation, this is already known in the compact supported case. In our case, there's a little bit of the correlation would cause a little bit of trouble, but it's not a big trouble we see in the moment. So questions is there exists a critical value beta 1 such that for beta small enough, smaller than beta, the solution u converges to something called ZX. And ZX will be a stationary field, so stationary in space. So it has a larger time limit. Now, I think this is actually quite an interesting part people been using. And to see there is a large time solution when use of the pullback solution. What we do is take this equation, but you don't start at zero. You start at minus, so you start from zero. So this is zero, but we start at a time further back in time, but we rewind then to zero, just rewind forward. And at S, at this point S is starting from one, as the same as the U we're interested in. To start from the same one, but from different time, you run forward. Then because of the invariance of the wet noise, it's easy to see this solution starting back at S, you evolved for time S forward, so you arrive at time zero. This field is the same in law as the solution of this one at time S when starting from zero at the flat solution, flat condition one. So this is they are equal in law. And to show there is a large time asymptotics, is sufficient to look at the pullback solution. This is the random dynamic system viewpoint. And turns out the pullback solution converges as you pull back further towards minus infinity. And that solution we can call the Z pullback Tx. The to show this actually works, we just look at the two solutions at the starting at time k prime and k and look at the difference. Both of them solve the same equation. That's the marvel about the pullback. And then the initial condition vanish. So all we look at it to see is the difference of these two from minus k to t. And the 2 time difference, minus k prime to minus k. And then you do this convolution. So this looks like it's going to converge. And in fact, when the first step, of course, one need to control a suitable norm and prove this Cauchy sequence. For that, one look at the L2 norm of this guy or LP norm of this guy. And using Ito isometry, but recall now we have correlation. So the correlation function would come in. Normally, there would be Y1 equal to Y2 because of wet noise. But here you have the correlation comes in, and that's the heat kernel, and we need to work with this mess. That's the price to pay with a correlation function here. Now, maybe I'm going to just give you some elementary lemmas to see how the estimate work. Here this is semigroup and here is the noise. If we look at the L2 norm, we will have a P multiply another P comes in, right, with R. So this thing comes in here. Assume our correlation function decays is x to the minus kappa, comma is between 2 and d. Then there's a couple of nice inequalities estimate we could do. So if you have twice of the heat kernel, the correlation give you of the z1 minus z2. And this decays to r to the minus kappa over 2. is here. And then there was also the convolution between the two pieces. And then this R coming in, that's also the difference. The X comes in through this exponent. Furthermore, of course, that's a different time. And there's a, okay. So this is all the estimate we sort of elementary at least estimate we could use to pull on. Now let's I'll be able to explain the result now. We take the stochastic heat equation called the solution U, rescaled by diffusively, call the rescaled solution U epsilon. Then U epsilon satisfy this equation. So basically, we all have a as before, right? That's epsilon minus 2 comes out. Now, epsilon minus 2, when it was a space-time white noise, we break it down to this d over 2 minus 1 and epsilon minus d over 2 minus 1. And one part was invariant for the white noise case. In our case, it turns out if one computed the covariance, this object, replace the d by kappa over 2. And this has a covariance epsilon minus kappa rx over epsilon. And this one has a profile, it converges. And that means the Gaussian noise converges. And so that's again, I guess I'm being inconsistent with the epsilon. So that's also the subscript. So C epsilon converged to a Gaussian noise. And now it's not a space-time. The correlation remains now. So if the compact supported, you wouldn't see a correlation in space. In our case, the correlation remains with x to the minus kappa correlation. Now it's natural. This guy converge, so we would like to see. So we take the solution, right, at UT, we minus the initial condition, and then we test with test function, then undo this scaling. So we have an epsilon 1 minus kappa over 2. We hope this converge. Now, the keyword now, decay of correlation here plays the role of dimension. Dimension disappeared in the limit. It doesn't play a role anymore. It's the decay of correlation plays the role. The main theorem is the following. Suppose given a test function G, we look at the object UT minus its average, which is 1, and rescaled so, and we call this function XT epsilon G to keep track of G. In the previous work, most of the work is proving XT epsilon G converges. For fixed G, XT epsilon G converges in distribution. And then identify the limit. What we really like to see is to show this object actually converges as a distribution. Okay. For that, we need to look at the correlations in time. So we take a multiple time and, of course, a multiple test function. And the theorem, the first theorem, the basic theorem states that there exists a critical value below it for the disorder beta. We would have the convergence, the joint convergence of these fluctuations to in distribution to this object. There is something called U, and the U at time T1 would be, so T, the T1 is here, right? So it's, that's the T1. So at T1, you would XT epsilon G1 would converge to the UT1x test with respect to G1. And UT solved the stochastic Hitch equation now with a correlated noise, which we call the W kappa. And W kappa have a correlation x to the minus kappa. And this variance and the variance is given by this formula. So this would be the result most people got at this stage. Now, of course, our variance is quite different from before. And the noise, we retains the correlation in space. And we also show the convergence are joint convergence in different times and tested with different test functions. So that's the foundation of limit theorem for proving the convergence of this guy to a random distribution. Any questions? Okay. If not, I mean, if this is okay with you, that's something Bayes' theorem to take home with. Is this fluctuation theorem with long range correlation? Now, it would look like maybe this is a natural result, right? But in fact, if we do a heuristic calculation, we don't see the result we stated there, the limit. Why? We know U epsilon have an average one, and we are looking at this scaling limit. For that, we could remove the one from the limit we define to be V, and V would be solving this equation plus this. Okay? You see, there's no more epsilon in that sense, well, it doesn't. What I'm saying is, if you look at this equation here, and if you think, you see epsilon kappa over two, right? If I take epsilon go to zero, we suppose don't see it. And if A, V epsilon converge, I should get zero. And that should be the sigma one, right? The result then heuristically would be that. And that's different from what we got. And because we of the effect variance is this object, right? U square, the expectation of the expectation of sigma and square afterwards. Okay. Now what goes wrong is really this resonance comes from the non-linear effect. And this guy and that, they interact, they produce extra noise in the system. I think when I, my time's almost up, is that right?
Well, we started a bit late, so I don't know. Did you want to add a bit, or shall we move to questions?
I can just add a flip a little bit quickly.
Okay.
It's a 3 or 4, 3 minutes. I'll be still.
Yeah, that's fine.
Yeah. Okay. So to finish this story, we have a proper convergence of X epsilon as stochastic process. So what it is we would have X epsilon not testing with Z, right? Just the X epsilon. We have this object converged to U, the solution of the SDE with additive noise. And this convergence will be in distribution, but in the C gamma norm, C gamma in time, and in the C alpha space with some constant one can describe. Maybe what I want to say is just one word about the proof. The proof involves some uniform bound of the solution in LOP. It's Mollerman derivative. And to obtain such bound, this little comparison theorem is quite cool, which we learned from some other people's paper. But in that paper, we finally decided that we couldn't prove the result that they claimed they have. We modified their proof. And but the whole idea still works beautifully. Then this of course convergence, the actual convergence follow from a Stan's method, so family for stochastic process converge to a Gaussian process if only if you test with some function h and then you look at the difference. This difference would be, you know, the difference of you so a function test weak function test with test function of two different random variables that converge to zero. That's a weak convergence that's controlled on the right-hand side by some L2 norm of a covariance of the limit of some the original thing you want to prove. You write down in divergence form of something called V, and then the Mollerman derivative V integrate with itself. So that thing should converge to the covariance of the limit. So that's a Stan's method. Okay, Stan's method is a bit like a Martingale convergence theorem in some sense. Martingale convergence means the bracket have to converge. In some sense, it's close to that. Okay, so we need use a standard method. We finally, because of the long range correlation, we would take all the limit rescaled and work out some little epsilon and multiply certain integrals of forms like this, a lot of integrals of this form. You look at the fractional y minus x, and there's a lot of the fractional object to integrate out coming from the correlation, the limited correlation we come. So we have to prove this. This guy's has a singularity at infinity, could have not integrable at infinity, could be having not integrable at zero. So you work out they are integrable in both cases. It's finite, then things works. I think maybe I should stop. Leave a time for question. Thank you very much.
Thank you very much. Okay.